Hello, everyone. My name is Jacob Minig. I'm the host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today, our episode is Psychedelic Assisted Therapy, and I have a very special guest, Rick O'Bannon. He is a graduate student at Adler Graduate School, and he's also the founder of the Adlerian Psychedelic Society. Rick, it's our pleasure having you here on my podcast. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Jake. It's wonderful to be here.
So right off the bat, I just have to ask you, what originally got you into this field? What was the passion? When was that moment that you knew, hey, I gotta be a therapist?
Well, I like to tell the story. I'll try not to be so long-winded about it because that's typically how I work. But I got interested in psychology when I was in about eighth grade. I picked up a book by Carl Jung. And that's really kind of what set the stage for my entire life. When I started reading Carl Jung, I didn't understand a word he was saying. I just knew that what he's saying was important. So it was just throughout my life that my continued passion towards psychology, depth psychology, religion, that kind of got me started and propelled me into this field.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Now, what then got you interested in psychedelic therapies to go along with therapy?
Psychedelic therapy in general for me kind of started in 2003, which I lovingly refer to as the psychedelic summer. I had various experiences with multiple sacred substances. And at that point, I was kind of a loser, to be perfectly honest with you. I was kind of floating through life and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And it was that summer that I kind of got reintroduced into my meaning of purpose in life. Mm. I reconnected with my oldest daughter now. She's 21. She kind of was a inspiration for me to be a better person, a better man, a better human being. So that's kind of what got me interested in it. And after that summer, I knew that these substances were very powerful, and used in the right kind of context, it could bring about some healing to a lot of pain and suffering that humanity has.
Absolutely. Now, that's more geared towards like depression, anxiety, PTSD. And they've obviously done a lot of studies to show that there is possible growth in that and improvements. That's like
absolutely. Absolutely. Also, eating disorders, smoking cessation, end of life care for cancer patients. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And of course, that's really the medical model for it. That's not even talking about the wellness model or the spiritual elements that these compounds have to it.
Could you actually go into the spiritual aspect of it a little bit more? That's really interesting.
I'd be glad to, because that's really, I think that's really where I'm going to end up on my journey. Through the individuation process, to quote Carl Jung. The spiritual element, a lot of these compounds have been used for thousands of years. Some of the oldest paintings that we have on cave walls depict mushrooms, whether they were psilocybin-containing mushrooms or Amanita muscaria. I guess we don't know yet, we will never know. However, there are places in Mexico that use it in a spiritual context. A lot of these substances are used by places like the Native American Church. Mm-hmm. Indigenous peoples of America have really been using them for a long time. And it's very, it brings a lot of warmness to the heart to see those kind of modalities being used inside of the spiritual element. But the mystical experience that these substances bring about really create a whole lot of change inside of the mind. And I mean, we could talk about how that happens or why that happens, but I think it really comes down to meaning and purpose in one's own individual life that really makes that the difference.
And I did a little digging myself, and especially when it comes to like trauma and individuals with severe PTSD, like when they get into these type of therapies with psychedelics, I have felt, or and I have seen, it really calms the person down, and they can kind of go back into those moments of trauma, and really it makes it easier for them to be in the moment and express their story. You know, it puts them in a good positive state of mind when doing that. So I guess that's what I found to be another benefit as well to that. I mean,
Absolutely. But it also really depends on the medicine that is being used. MDMA most certainly allows people to access past traumas. But things like the classic psychedelics, like psilocybin, DMT, LSD, yes. Serotonergic, I can never say that word right. Serotonergic. I'm not even know if I'm even saying that right either. But a lot of those things occasion mystical experiences. That works in a little different context than MDMA does. But MDMA has been shown to be super effective with trauma, especially with I guess would be military first responders, police officers. That is being widely beneficial to the help of those individuals.
And to piggyback off of that, that's another passion of mine, is that my thesis was actually on veterans with PTSD and substance abuse disorders. And well, originally mine was exercise science and how that can benefit, but just the fact that it's helped many veterans with PTSD was, again, a huge joy, you know, just in my heart to, you know, find that out, you know, and that's something I definitely want to get more into as well.
Oh, for sure. Especially listening to your podcast, every time you brought it up, all I could think of is MDMA assisted psychotherapy. Rick Doblin, he at MAPS, he really did the world a great service. I mean, he believed in the safety and the efficacy for MDMA, and he knew that the way to bring it back into our culture, since it was scheduled as a Schedule I substance, he knew that appealing to the veterans and that experience a lot of trauma, he really crossed the side of the aisles, both to with the Republicans and the Democrats that way. So kudos to Rick out there.
Absolutely. And another thing I want to kind of bring up with you, if you don't mind, is the stigmas and fears people may have with psychedelics. Like, why do you feel, in your mind, if it does, get so much, I guess, negative stigma in itself?
The negative stigma really was attached to the war on drugs. You know, the Controlled Substance Act that was enacted, and subsequently, you know, the DARE campaign. Society really latched onto that. These are very powerful substances that can elicit very powerful changes in people. But the media liked to concentrate on all of the negative press that it got during that time period. And unfortunately, the war on drugs was really a systematic campaign against minority populations. I mean, it's very racist, and we all know that now, but yet the government still has not loosened its restrictions on it. It's super unfortunate.
And it's funny because programs like DARE have not had hardly any success as well, too. It's just ironic in a sense.
And it most certainly is ironic. Ironic is most certainly the word that I would describe it. It's really sad because, you know, the war on drugs is pretty much coming to the end, and the drugs have won. We look at places like Spain and Portugal that have instigated decriminalization policies, and they actually saw the rate of addiction go down. But yet, We're still over here in America. We're supposed to be the best country in the world, but we can't enact drug policies that actually benefit the common man.
And I also wonder if it's more just the media, you know, the fear that media puts into the general population about just these type of drugs in general, and how it will ruin your life, you know, if you take this particular drug or the psychedelic. And again, I wonder if it just causes fear in people not to even try something like this, even though there's a huge chance it could be extremely beneficial.
I think that you're onto something there. And don't get me wrong, there are casualties to a lot of these substances. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're really in, I mean, if you just use, say, the heroin epidemic that we have in America, that it ruins people's lives. But we don't talk about the people that don't have addiction problems, because you don't see those highlighted in the news. People like Dr. Carl Hart, in his book, Drug Use for Grownups, he highlights a lot of these kind of things. I mean, he's a big proponent, neuroscientist, psychologist, and he's a huge proponent for drug use for people that are responsible. But the big problem is adulterants in a lot of these substances that cause the problem. When you make something illegal, people go to the black market, and it's often cut with other substances in those drugs that can cause a lot of problems for a lot of people, such as fentanyl. I mean, that's typically the biggest example. If everybody had a safe supply, it could be managed a whole lot easier. And then we can look to places like Spain and Portugal for those kind of things.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool because we're kind of getting into the harm reduction model. And again, I'm a huge fan of Dr. Carl Hart. I explained something earlier or in the past episode where he said there's like a type of machine where you can actually put your drugs in to actually make sure you know what's in it to make sure, again, it is safe for you to take. Because if a person, let's say, dies on fentanyl or any type of opioid, if any other substances are in the system, the media tends not to announce that. They just say it's an opioid-related death, which legally they can actually do, which is bizarre, but...
No, opioids, it's a huge problem. I mean, there's all... In a lot of other countries, you can actually send your supply in to get tested. And you can have those machines in other countries to get tested. Mm-hmm. But yet, if we tried to do something like that here, you would be arrested for drug possession. What we can do about it? Advocate. I think that's probably the only way that we're gonna reach out and try to change some of these problems that exist.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I kind of want to add to that regarding like psychedelics. Yes, we know it's a drug or whatnot, but through my experience in this field, we still have so many like facilities that still have the goal of complete abstinence from a drug. So their points of view could be, well, how can you take a drug to cure another drug or trauma or other issues with the person rather than doing something like a 12-step, you know, traditional model?
Okay, so that's you gave me two or three different avenues of thought when you
love
were
it.
Talking about this.
Nice.
So the first avenue that it makes me think of, especially when in terms of psychedelics being used inside of therapy, for one, the classic psychedelics do not have physical addiction. You can't be physically addicted. Actually, it's anti-addictive because the body builds a tolerance to the classic psychedelics. And if you were to take a psychedelic, a lot of time you don't want to take that psychedelic for a while just because it's such a powerful experience. MDMA is a little bit different because it operates on different avenues inside of brain chemistry. But just speaking strictly on classic psychedelics, it's not just necessarily the substance that's being used in treatment, it's treatment and the substance. So you're not, like most of the time, when you say you had depression or PTSD, you're prescribed a drug to take pretty much your entire life. That doesn't work that way with some of these substances. You're administered it between 1 and 4 times within a therapeutic context to treat it, and then you may not ever have to take that drug again for the rest of your life.
Wow, that's amazing. Yep. It really is. It's And a lot of it, people may be just really naive to, again, the information you just gave right now.
And that's why there's that the education and advocacy portion is so important inside of the space. You have people, again, like I know I keep talking about Rick Doblin, but I'm a huge fan of him. But I mean, he goes out and he advocates and educates people because they may not know. All they hear about is, you know, the really misguided studies from the 1970s saying LSD will cause chromosome damage, or which is completely false and has been empirically verified to be false as well. But there's still this narrative inside of our culture that exists that drugs equal bad, even though we consume drugs on a regular basis, whether it's coffee, nicotine, alcohol. Some of these create a lot more problems than any of these could possibly do to an individual.
Mm-hmm. And something else that what you just said reminds me of is when you said that sometimes people don't like have to like take this for the long term. Like you maybe only need to take it once or twice and you could be good for a very long time. But then I see people take like antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications every day, which again, I'm not saying is bad, but I just feel that it's very interesting that studies have shown that maybe 40 to 50% of the people, it doesn't actually work for them in regards to again, antidepressant or anti-anxiety medications.
And that's not to say some of these anti-anxiety medications are necessarily bad, because for a lot of people, mm-hmm. it is very helpful for them and makes marked improvements on their lives. But you also have to understand, and to all of the news and press coverage that psychedelics are getting inside of the media, psychedelics are not a panacea. They're not an end-all, be-all cure mm-hmm. for everything. For people, some people, they just don't work. I mean, we're all individuals. We all have our different chemistries. We all have our own different backgrounds. It's just that it is being shown empirically with evidence and result-driven therapy that these kind of things, these kind of substances in conjunction with therapy are super beneficial to a large swath of society.
Absolutely. And here's another thing that may help my listeners and tune the population. Because a lot of times, you know, we may not know what would actually happen if we want to do like a psychedelic assisted therapy. Could you inform us on like usually the process that would happen with the therapist and the client?
Well, there are many programs out there right now. And since there is no standard, since they are still not FDA approved, but there are states and countries that you can provide this kind of therapy to individuals. However, with phase 3 trials currently underway for MDMA through MAPS and phase 2 trials currently underway through Compass Pathways, we will see these substances become decriminalized and rescheduled. And that will allow for a standard of practices throughout America. So, for instance, MAPS currently has an MDMA-assisted psychotherapy training program, which I'm a huge proponent of, just because they're the standard bearer within the field. But you're going to see a lot of others come down the way. For instance, you know, psychedelics today, they just rolled out, actually, I think this month, their vital training program, which does similar things, but with the end goal to remain, make sure that everything stays safe and efficacious. So, you mean you can look at a bunch of different training programs, but I personally would recommend sticking to the ones that are more empirically verified, that have a whole following behind them.
Could you actually explain a little bit more to the listeners what MAPS actually is in general?
MAPS is the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. It was founded by Rick Doblin, and their whole goal, it was to make sure that they were providing a service to the community revolving around the substance MDMA, which is their main component. They've been around for quite a number of years, I think over 30 years now. But Rick Doblin really saw a need to treat veterans with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And he knew by doing that, he would be able to garner, get support within the government. So I know that they're operating here in the States. They also, I believe, consult in Canada. If I'm saying the wrong things, I'm sure your listeners will correct me, and that's totally fine because I like to learn. But also in Israel as well.
Okay. So I want to ask your personal opinion on something. Let's say if a therapist wants to get into this, right? Do you feel like they should try it, let's say, at least once in their life, like a psychedelic assisted therapy, before they could do it to other clients? So
that's the golden question inside of the community, Jake. I think it's really up to the person that is going to commit themselves to psychedelic assisted psychotherapy, mm-hmm. as far as the counselor on the counseling side, whether they choose to take the substance or not. I know through MAPS, you do have the opportunity to take MDMA, which I think is very important, but for a lot of other people that may not work, because with MDMA, along with a lot of these substances, there are potential risks involved. So you kind of have to talk to your doctor about that. Me personally, I would be all for it. It is a powerful modality of healing, and understanding where your patient is going to be inside of the journey, I think is very important to the therapeutic process, that client counselor relationship.
You know, and I do fully agree with that. And again, I'm not going to lie, it wasn't really biases. It was more of my personal fear of not knowing what would happen. Let's say if I did take take MDMA, like what would the side effects be? And would there be any long-term side effects? Now that I know a little bit more, like I can make a better decision on that. But again, it's just naiveness, you know, I didn't know. So then it caused a little fear in me regarding that, you know, step.
And, you know, and that's unfortunately one of the other casualty on the war on drugs is we don't have that kind of information. We don't have that kind of research. We don't have that kind of information available for people to make informed decisions for themselves. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, what do you think about the future of psychedelic therapy? So after we get past phase three, what would be the next final step?
Well, so the way that I see it, and I know that a lot of people within the community see this as well, is it's going to be a three-pronged approach. So you're going to see the medical model, you're going to see the wellness model, and you're going to see the spiritual model. So the medical model, if it's rescheduled and then it's available for psychotherapists to use inside of their practice, we'll see a paradigm shift. The way that I like to look at it is there is a gigantic tidal wave that is about ready to crash into our society and into psychotherapy that I don't think that we've ever really seen before. It kind of happened in the 60s, but unfortunately, the way that it went about was not the best. So a lot of the medical model, the people that are interested in the medical model in the space are trying to keep it very close and keep it restricted enough to make sure that there is no harm being caused to the general population. Because, the way the media is, you know, you get one wrong story about this and then it's going to blow up and then the media is going to completely turn against the whole movement. I know that they're really trying hard to stay away from that. So that's really the medical model. As far as the wellness model goes, we're going to see a lot of retreat centers open up. Companies like Field Trip opening up these wellness centers where you can go in and have a bunch of different modalities, whether it's yoga, meditation, nature therapy, massage, the list goes on and on. but also with the medicine. I know in Jamaica, there is a psilocybin retreat center that you can go and essentially have that sort of thing. Canada's getting ready to, I think they're already moving on a lot of this stuff too. So that's really the wellness side of it. And then you have the spiritual side, which I'm probably most interested in, other than the fact that I'm going into psychedelic assisted psychotherapy myself. But that really comes with utilizing some of the practices from the indigenous cultures. Now, places like the Native American Church, you have to be a member of the Native American Church to partake in their ceremonies. And then you get into the idea of sacred reciprocity within the space, as a lot of these are medicines that are being utilized by these indigenous people that probably we as white people with privilege should probably think about just letting them have their own thing and us looking towards other modalities for ourselves. There's a big problem, for instance, the whole peyote, since it's becoming more and more popular, there's not enough to go around. Mm-hmm. It only grows in a very tiny space. I say tiny, relatively tiny space in Texas and North Mexico. And there's annual pilgrimage by these indigenous people that go and to collect these plants, these cacti, these sacred plants. But what we see is a lot of white people go in and they harvest it, and then there's not enough for everybody else. Not enough for these indigenous peoples to utilize it within their ceremonies. And it's a crying shame. And the same thing you could say about the Sonoran desert toad. The Sonoran desert toad, they extract, I guess, the mucus excretions from these toads and use it and smoke DMT, 5-MeO-DMT that comes from that. It's just the same kind of thing. There's just what we're doing to the world, what we're doing to our environment, what we're doing to these sacred plants and medicines and animals, we really need to get a hold on it.
Absolutely, because again, we want to help out like all cultures in this, and we need to be aware of our actions and what we do and how we can, again, have a negative effect on that. Absolutely. You know, I'm curious too, what would happen in the future when we get this solidified, is how our insurance company is going to, I guess, handle this. I've always wondered about that, how we would get reimbursed for these type of therapies.
That's also a huge question in the space. You do your homework, man.
Just a thought, you know.
It's from the way that it's looking, MDMA assisted psychotherapy, since MAPS works very closely with the federal government, whether it's the FDA and the DEA, and also insurance companies, I would wager that it will be reimbursed by insurance. It's very expensive. I think the initial estimates for a full round of MDMA treatment was looking at about $80,000.
Oh my God.
Now, Rick Doblin did get the FDA to make concessions, because originally you have a two-person team throughout the entire process. It has to, they had to be an MD or PhD, and he got them to concede to, because he didn't think that made sense, to a licensed psychotherapist, and for the second person can be an intern. So that reduces the cost substantially away from that.
That's good. That's good. Well, you just provide a lot of great information for us, man. Again, I know my listeners and myself greatly appreciate it. I also want to get an understanding of your, again, page. Again, you being the founder of Adlerian Psychedelic Society, would you like to talk to the listeners a little bit about that, and then what you hope from the program and your page as a group?
Well, I founded the Adlerian Psychedelic Society in the hopes that I can bring students within Adler Graduate School a place to kind of convene and talk about what is going on within the space. Originally, the idea was to make it not only just for people to advocate for the subject, but I was hoping to get people that were also critical on the subject, because I thought there was going to be a lot more blowback and criticism mm-hmm. than I actually have received. In fact, I've got nothing but support from everybody that I've talked to. I'm heavily indebted to Adler for the chance to be able to talk about these subjects and not to be scorned or criticized. I think really what it comes down to, and even if therapists are not going to use these kind of modalities in their treatment, I think it's also very important that there is a language and a vocabulary that they can use with their clients about it. The way I like to explain it is, if you say, for instance, you had no idea what psychedelics were about, you didn't necessarily agree that people should use them, but you have a client that comes to you and talks about that kind of mystical, deep experience that they've had. It's like, do you have the language and the vocabulary to talk about that? And I think that was also the branch of the Adlerian Psychedelic Society, is I wanted to get people that may not ever have anything to do with it, just so a place where they can come and look at resources, so they may be able to have that kind of conversation with their clients in the future, because it's coming. A lot of these experiences are going to be very prevalent in the next 10 or 20 years. I just want to make sure people have the right tools in the toolbox to use with those clients. I think it's very important.
And from a coordination of care aspect, I think it's also important. Let's say there's a therapist or a probation officer or another healthcare worker that has a client that's interested in this. If that healthcare worker, let's say, does not really know about psychedelic assisted therapy, that they don't just jump to, oh, it's horrible, it's negative, and then form these stigmas so they cannot give adequate information to the clients to help them out. That's what I kind of worry about.
Yeah. And luckily, within the space, I don't have the book with me, but there just published a medical handbook for medical hallucinogens that was specifically geared towards healthcare providers and clinicians to educate people on the effects, whether it's physical or mental, psychological, you know, that whole holistic approach to the human being.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I just have to say, man, thank you for an amazing podcast. I certainly have learned so much. And another thing that I liked about your page is that I found this really cool book called The Wind Is My Mother by Bearhart. I literally just got that book a few days ago, and I got it in the audio book form, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
Bearhart was an incredible man. I mean, I could speak a lot to that, because right now I'm in multicultural counseling. So I'm heavily in that space, that mindset of making sure that we appeal to the indigenous people, or trying to help them where they're at, meeting them where they're at. And, you know, Bearhart was in this limbo in between the traditions and his culture that his people carried for thousands of years, and then coming up in a society that was not that way. So we kind of straddled, the traditional white ethnocentric model of culture, which is total fallacy. But that's for a totally different conversation. But and his traditional model. And what I really liked about it is he really walked through his experience being a shaman, and how that impacts the people around him, and him advocating for that kind of thing. And he actually discusses peyote use inside of the book, which is very interesting, because a lot of those spiritual modalities are not necessarily talked about in the indigenous context, because that's very personal to them. So for him to be able to share that with the reader that's not necessarily indigenous is really a gift. And I thank them. I wherever you are out there, Bearhart, thank you very much.
Amen. Me as well. Well, before we go, Rick, would you like to let the audience know, if they want to find more information about this stuff, how they can get a hold of you through, I guess, phone, email, or whatever?
Well, probably the best way to reach me is either on the Adlerian Psychedelic Society via Facebook. You can just search there, ask to join, I'll approve it. If you want to get a hold of me personally, you could always email me. It's Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, dot D, as in David, dot O'Bannon, O-B-A-N-N-O-N, at gmail.com. That probably the easiest way to reach me. I'm always here. Anybody needs just somebody to talk to. I mean, I guess that's the reason why I'm going to become a counselor in the first place. Future podcast, I'm always here to help or educate.
Absolutely. And again, it was a great benefit for me and the listeners, man. It was truly awesome having you on.
Thanks, Jake. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
I also want to inform everyone that if the information that was said on this podcast was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice, if you find yourself dealing with mental health issues, please seek the professional services of a medical doctor or a licensed professional counselor. All right, thank you, everyone. Bye.